prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. It's Thursday, which means that we are doing the Subversity Science Roundup, where Adele Musa applies the sniff test to a lot of research out there to find out, is it accurate? Is it believable? And what should we make of it? If you've never visited the website before, the single best blog on the internet, bar none, is Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com, authored by my guest, Adele Musa. How are you doing, Adele?
I'm doing fine.
Okay.
And slowly I'm getting accustomed to those hyperboles of yours.
I know. I'm making you immune to them. Soon you won't even blush. How about that?
Well, I don't know if that's a good thing, but it could be.
Okay. So let's get right to the subject at hand. We've got a lot of good science to talk about. I think that the thing that's on both of our minds was something that we were discussing before we started the show, and that was this recent research on betaine. Now, before we get into it, betaine is basically used as a digestive enzyme, is it not?
Well, if it's attached to hydrochloric acid, then it's used as a digestive enzyme. Otherwise, it's rather a methyl donor and also an osmolyte for your cells. So the betaine you usually have in those digestive enzymes is more or less identical with the digestive with the HCl in your stomach, and this is actually not the betaine you would want to use if you would like to get the performance benefits, because this would also cause a highly acidic state if you ingested 2.5 grams of that every day, and especially before a workout without food. And the one you are looking for is actually 3-methylglycine, which is also called betaine. And I know that people usually confuse it, and there's also another carbohydrate, actually. It's a sugar, at least here in Germany. It's also sold as betaine. And people always confuse those three, and sometimes they get the exact wrong one and wonder, for example, why the 3-methylglycine won't help them digest their foods. And the other way around, they wonder how anybody could take 2.5 grams of that stuff before a workout without getting serious problems with the stomach or her stomach.
Okay, so in order to source the right betaine that we're going to be talking about, what should someone be looking for then?
You should look out for the name 3-methylglycine or TMG.
Okay, very good. So what does the research say about 3-methylglycine or betaine as it is in this study?
Well, it's quite interesting. There's been lots of research in the past, and most of it is coming from this laboratory at the University of Connecticut, the Human Performance Laboratory, and they have been doing research into betaine for quite some time now. And this is actually one of the first studies, or at least it is the first study I know of, that investigates the effects of chronic supplementation. In this case, chronic was just for 2 weeks, but was not just taking betaine once before a workout. So it was chronic in a way. And what effect this would have on 12 trained men in the age of 20. And what they found, and what was really the news in this study, is that what you usually refer to as an anabolic milieu, that is the hormonal expression in response to a workout was in favor of future muscle growth or protein synthesis. And specifically, the IGF-1 levels were increased, and the increase in cortisol in response to the workout was decreased. And this is a reason enough for the researchers to conclude that these results would suggest that the protein synthesis in response to the workout should be upregulated, although the so-called AKT levels, which is a protein that directly modulates the protein synthesis at the tissue level.
What does AKT stand for, Adele?
I don't know it.
Okay, okay. Because I've never known what it was too, and I've read it in so many studies, and I thought maybe we'll find out.
I always have to look up exactly what it means. It will come back to me in a moment.
Yes.
In a way, it's a protein that's regulated also by the mammalian target of rapamycin.
Which I was going to say, anytime I see AKT in studies, I always see mTOR either in that same study or adjacent to the AKT. Is there a reciprocal relationship between AKT and mTOR?
Yeah, you could say it gets the job done. It's more or less the protein that's directly responsible for the protein synthetic response.
Okay.
Although this standard paradigm has been questioned by some researchers, and especially because AKT is also preferentially expressed in response to insulin, and we have seen a couple of studies which showed that it is not really necessary to have extremely high insulin levels to trigger the protein synthetic response. And this caused some questions as far as the importance of AKT actually in the protein synthetic cascade is, and whether it is necessary, facilitative, additive, or whether there are alternative pathways. But in general, one of the weaknesses actually of this study is that they did not really measure the protein synthetic response. And this goes back to what I've just said, that we are not really sure in how much even increases in AKT would mean that we do necessarily see an increase in protein synthesis. And what we saw in this study was not even an increase in AKT, but just that the administration of betaine was able to blunt the decrease in AKT. And this may be related to the fact that the participants trained in a fast state, and as I said before, AKT is also tightly regulated by insulin, and insulin went down in both groups likewise, and betaine had no influence on the insulin response to the workout. And so you could still say that probably if you had fed the participants an appropriate post-workout nutrition shake, like, for example, something highly insulinogenic,
right,
like whey protein, you would expect to see an increase in protein synthesis, and you would have a theoretically more anabolic hormonal milieu with the IGF-1 and the IGF-1 elevated and the cortisol downregulated. So, in essence, what we are seeing here are the best circumstances for muscular growth, but the extent to which those proteins were expressed or to which betaine induced those changes is not exactly very large. They are statistically significant, but for those who did already visit the subversity within the last, I believe, 2 hours, they will have seen that I've actually posted a lengthy review of the study today. And when I did calculate the actual numbers or did the calculations, then it's an increase in an 18% increase in IGF-1 over baseline in the betaine group. On the other hand, you have a decrease in the placebo group. So in the end, that is probably the most significant change, while the blunted cortisol increase is just a 5% reduction in cortisol. So this is not that extensive, and I always like to remind everyone of these studies that have been done at the McMaster University, where they actually followed trainees for 15 weeks and assessed those hormonal parameters, that is, growth hormone and IGF-1, testosterone, and other of those purported anabolic hormones. And surprisingly, they found that of all of those, the one that showed a statistically significant correlation with increases in lean muscle mass was cortisol. And this was a positive correlation. That means the greater the cortisol response immediately after the workout, the greater the lean mass gains of the respective subjects.
Really?
So
now that would fly in the face of what would be considered common knowledge. I mean, we think of cortisol as a catabolic signaling hormone.
Yeah, well, that's, in a way, that's right. But common knowledge is often commonly stupid. It's common stupid rather, because it usually tries to picture things in terms of black and white. And if you think about situations in which a doctor will prescribe cortisol or corticosteroids, you always find that those are the situations of great inflammation. And the main function, or the two basic functions of cortisol, are actually, first of all, get your blood glucose level to normal. That is, it's a glucocorticoid. That means when you're about to go hypoglycemic, cortisol will do its job and make your body or induce a gluconeogenesis in the liver and help your body to get the blood glucose level to normal in order to protect you from passing out. That is the first function. And the second function of cortisol is that it's highly anti-inflammatory. And it's not like you have high cortisol levels and therefore you are inflamed, but rather you are inflamed and therefore you have high cortisol levels. And when you think about working out, and especially about working out really hard, then an acute cortisol response that would help to keep the inflammation at bay,
right,
actually a good thing, and therefore probably also the reason we see this correlation. And it really flies in the face of a conventional wisdom, but it also goes to show you that you always have to differentiate between chronic overexpression and acute and appropriate spikes in cortisol, and the same is true for insulin.
Interesting. So what is your takeaway from this study? What is it that you feel can absolutely be extrapolated from this study without overreaching?
I think also based on previous studies I cite in the end of the article I've just mentioned at the subversity, we do already know that in the shorter run, where you usually don't really see increases in lean muscle mass, that is 2 weeks or 4 week studies are usually too short. 4 weeks is sometimes efficient that you can see sufficient to see significant changes between groups, but otherwise, you will usually have to rely on strength markers. And we have seen a couple of studies in the past that were able to show that by taking roughly 2.5 grams of trimethylglycine per day, you can elicit small but statistically significant increases in either the training volume or the training load. And we all know that by continually making progress in terms of training volume and training load, you will eventually build more muscle mass. And I would just want to remind everyone that that 80% of the trainees will tell you that they believe that beta-alanine is the next best thing to creatine. And if you look at the effect sizes, there may be more research in beta-alanine, but in effect, it does a similar job. It allows you to train a little harder to make a little more progress on a per-workout base. And this little progress can accumulate over half a year, for example, and give you the edge. And I've just checked when I posted the article what the current price on trimethylglycine is, and you can get a 1 kilo pouch if you buy it in bulk at one of the major bulk suppliers in the U.S. for $33 or $34. And this would last you for 200 days, even if you double dose. So compared to many other supplements, that's pretty cheap, and it's obviously it's safe. And the worst thing that could happen is that you don't see any improvements in your in your workouts or in your strength gains and in your mass gains. And on the other hand, it is also beneficial as it betaine has been shown to help to reduce hyperhomocysteinemia,
right,
and therefore could also help you avoid heart disease.
Right, a marker for heart disease by itself, right.
Yeah, and it has beneficial effects on the liver as well. So it's worth a try, I would say.
Okay, so it is worth a try. Okay, well, we're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, you know, it's flu season. Is it flu season in Germany right now, Adele?
Not really, you know, but they are already starting to pimp the vaccine.
Oh, man, everywhere you go here in the United States, every place, I'm waiting for them to start doing them in the drive-thrus at fast food restaurants where you can stop in and get a... would you like to upgrade that to the Biggie Fries with flu shot? Every place you look, they're promoting the flu shot right now. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about immune system function and selenium. How does that sound?
Okay.
You're listening to the Supversity Science Roundup with the brilliant Adele Moussa, who, as you can see, painstakingly covers all the bases so you get all of the information, not just the little tagline stories that the mainstream media gives you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRadio. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you. AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead. No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechano Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner add today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Mass Pro Synthogen is unlike any supplement to come before it, both in form and function. Synthogen is the world's first messenger RNA translation accelerator. Messenger RNA is the rate-limiting step in growing new muscle. Synthogen rapidly stimulates protein synthesis on demand, day or night. Synthogen allows you to train harder, longer, stronger, and more frequently than your competition. Synthogen is the absolute fastest drug-free recovery agent available. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Synthogen banner ad to learn more. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
Get stronger, feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup with Adele Musa and myself as we address the things that you'll hear about in the news, but we do it a little differently here. Adele tells the truth. He doesn't pander to the little punchline type summaries that you'll find most in the media will, because he has a brain. He doesn't have to depend on somebody writing what he says. He can interpret science himself. A lot of you have sent me emails after my disclosure of the way I'm training on the Blueprint Power Hour, and want you to know that I am taking off today. I got up at 5:30 this morning, got on the treadmill, did 10 minutes, and thought, you know, I'm there today. I'm not listening to myself, and so I didn't go to the gym. I didn't do anything at all. I needed today off because I went heavier than ever yesterday. I will keep you abreast of my progress, I promise. Okay, Adele, it's flu season here in the United States. Everybody's worried about their immune system. Is there some magic in selenium? I happen to eat 3 to 4 Brazil nuts a day because I'm still one of those idiots that believes selenium will help detoxify my body of mercury, which you've already proven doesn't necessarily work that way. What does selenium do for the immune system?
First of all, it does help mercury and other heavy metal detoxification pathways, but it does not really completely prevent the onslaught of large amounts of mercury on your body. That is, you are not really bulletproof, but you are better off with additional selenium than you would be without.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that was actually not the reasoning the scientists in this particular study had, who did actually fatten up pigs, they fed 72 pigs from a few weeks after their birth to 130 kilos of body weight. And they had two groups, and one group had the normal selenium diet, which contained 180 micrograms per kilo body weight of those animals, and the other one got an additional 360 micrograms added to the regular feed.
Okay, now wait. I want to slow this down just for a second. First of all, 180 micrograms per kilo of body weight versus 360 micrograms per kilo of body weight was the supplementation value, correct?
No, additional 360 micrograms. So the supplemented group got 440.
Ah, okay. That's why I wanted to clarify, because I'm a little slow on the uptake sometimes. Number two, real briefly, just give the audience, the newbies who are coming to the show, a brief understanding of why research done in pigs translates so well to humans, because I happen to know that it does.
Well, it depends on which area we're looking at, but especially in terms of what pigs eat. Pigs are omnivores as well, and their whole digestive tract, how it functions, they are very similar to us. And many of you will probably have heard of the so-called human equivalent doses. And it's quite telling that you don't have to do any calculations if you're converting from pig to human, because the calculation would be about divide by 35 and multiply by 37. So this does already tell you something about how good an adult pig is as a model for a human being, that you don't really even have to recalculate the values you are given, because usually we would now have to use these measures, that is 180 micrograms per kilo body weight for the pigs, and calculate them or do the calculations to get the human equivalent doses. But since we are dealing with pigs and their these equivalent calculations are based on certain parameters of the physiology, including the surface area of an animal, and this is so similar to us.
And also, it should be understood also that the pigs are very similar to us biologically. This is why there's a company here in the United States called Armour, and they produce bacon and bologna and all sorts of pig-based meat products. Well, guess what they also produce for the pharmaceutical industry? Armour thyroid, which is desiccated pig thyroid. Because pig thyroid and human thyroid is almost indistinguishable. It's almost identical. I mean, it is identical. So much so that it's better to take desiccated pig thyroid than synthetic Synthroid when you have a thyroid problem. So what happens in pigs generally happens in us. That's really the important thing here. And as Adele points out, the dose equivalency is very, very close for us to extrapolate. So what did we learn about these pigs when they were given the higher 540 microgram a day dose of selenium?
Well, interestingly enough, we are meeting another old friend that is an epigenetic change and in the area of the immune function and specifically in their immune cells. There are 28 genes that change that are related to immune function, and some of them were changed profoundly, that is, they were increased by almost 100%. And in general, the scientists, usually when you do those assays, you can only roughly estimate what the general consequence will be, because all those genes work in concert, and we can't say, okay, if gene A is increased, the necessary result will be that the pigs will be more resistant to either viruses or bacteria. But in general, it appears that those 28 genes which were upregulated or modified, I should say, in context with others which were downregulated, provided a better immune profile that would help the pigs not only to ward off offenders, but also to manage what is a real problem in human beings at the moment, and it's an increasing problem, that is autoimmunity. So those genes could help the immune cells to really identify the real intruders instead of attacking their own body or mistaking their own body for an intruder. And we don't really know what the downstream effects will be, because they only measured the genetic changes and they did not subsequently expose the animals to a certain assault. But there were obviously no real negative consequences for the pigs, and this is pretty interesting, because selenium is one of those minerals where many people are actually deficient in. On the one hand, you get tons of selenium in the average Brazil nut. On the other hand, the next best follower has about 10 times less selenium in it. And for A, not everybody will be eating Brazil nuts. And B, even if you are, the content of selenium in those Brazil nuts can vary from batch to batch. That is, even if you always buy the same brand,
right,
may well be that one brand has, say, 10 times the amount of selenium than the other.
Yeah, because we know that growing conditions can actually concentrate active ingredients in the produce. We know this about nuts as well. This is one of the problems with soy, not to get off the beaten path here, but you have the levels of phytoestrogens sometimes are concentrated higher in drier seasons. The soy has a lot more estrogen in it because it's panicking under those kind of stressful conditions. It produces more of these things. So the same is true of Brazil nuts. It's not as easily measurable as, say, taking a supplement that you know has certain number of micrograms in it. Would you agree with that statement, Adele?
True, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because I'm really not a proponent of taking the same amount of every mineral every day, and I'm really against taking a multivitamin for that reason, and for the simple reason that you can't produce a multivitamin that fits everyone. And I feel like people always think that they are better off taking a 100% dose of everything as a baseline, and then they are allowed to do whatever they want instead of just looking to consume the respective foods, which have the corresponding other ingredients, which are often important for A, the absorption, or B, avoiding side effects you can get if you ingest those micronutrients on their own. And maybe it should also mention that in the study at hand, they used a selenium yeast That is a bacterially produced, and bacterially contains selenium product.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do some research on selenium supplementation, it appears that at least within the last years, although there has been some pimping by the respective producers of those yeast products, the general consensus appears to be that those quote-unquote biological alternatives to the classic selenium supplements are at least as good absorbed by your body or as highly bioavailable. And oftentimes they produce better downstream effects, for example, on glutathione production,
mm-hmm.
Than the same amounts from another selenium source.
So these selenium yeasts this was one of the things that was in a product that we talked about that was made for animals and humans are taking it. It's a fermented yeast, but it's fermented in the absence of oxygen, believe it or not. And one of the things that it had was, I want to say, a selenomethionine or something like that. Isn't that one of the forms of selenium yeast, selenomethionine?
Yeah, exactly. They are producing it, and it's quasi-contained in the yeast supplement. And
right. Okay, so selenium, so do you feel that getting your selenium from, let's say, Brazil nuts, as I do, you know, I don't know that I'm getting the amount. I'm going to have to look at the micrograms per kilogram of body weight for myself. You think that's going to be adequate, or should we strive to find one of these selenium yeast type products?
Well, personally, I've made it a habit of eating Brazil nuts almost every day, and maybe this is obvious enough that my position is that this is more than enough. You will get more than enough selenium from a handful of Brazil nuts, and you will also get other good things like the different vitamin E's, and in general, eating nuts, not just Brazil nuts, although I know that there are people out there who will now start lamenting about the anti-nutrients in them. If you don't overdo it and don't eat nuts with every meal, they are generally okay. And
I agree with you there. I think there's emerging research that shows that that nuts should be used not, you know, all day long, every meal. You should use them sparingly.
No, not as a snack. You carry around and eat one nut at a time. No, you can have it. For example, I like to add some nuts into a certain. In Germany, it's called Quark. But it's that's something like a dairy product that's similar to cottage cheese, but
okay.
It's a creamier. And you can use that with some stevia or add some protein powder for flavor to it. So it's sweet, and you can add nuts and whatever you want to it, and it tastes delicious. So this is the way I often eat, incorporate nuts into my diet. And I think you can also have a handful of nuts from time to time. But I would strongly advise against this pathological way of eating, where you carry around nuts all day and have one almond at a time every 2 minutes or so in order to suppress your appetite, because the exact opposite will happen. The more you or the more frequently you eat, the hungrier you will get. And I suppose you will have seen the study that has been published as of late that investigated just that paradigm and showed that the only quote-unquote benefit you get from eating 6 square meals instead of 3 square meals per day is that you're getting hungrier and your desire to eat is increasing.
Right.
And otherwise there's no metabolic benefit to it if the meals are or the overall energy intake remains the same. And this type of grazing people always do and try to do to get over episodes where they either don't eat or where they don't allow themselves to eat, or they believe they would be in a catabolic state if they didn't do that. That is just pathological in my mind. And in this terms, I mean, in a psychological sense, pathological. And it's not conducive to your goals. And if you can't go without food for a couple of hours, it's a certain sign that something is really messed up with your metabolism. And you should better look into the reasons of that than trying to circumvent that by popping whatever, if it's nuts or if it's, for example, anorexics do this. They are always chewing either gum or they are taking those little sweets, like you are lollipops or
oh, yeah, like. Okay, a sucker or something, or even the hard candy maybe, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And so that way they feel engaged in eating all the time, so they don't feel deprived, I guess, is what they're trying to do. We have to take a break. When we come back, since you imposed the vitamin E nomenclature when talking about nuts and Brazil nuts, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the research that you found on tocotrienols, okay?
Fine, yeah.
Okay, you're listening to the Supversity Science Roundup with Adele Moussa. Visit Supversity, SUPPVERSITY.com today. We'll be right back. Never endorsed a training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both The Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint Forum to ensure your success.
Summer is here. You need help quick. You need the 21-Day Beachbody Challenge from 21dayfit.com. Want muscle? Want chiseled abs? Want to feel great about your body? Then go to 21dayfit.com today and get the results you want in 21 days. From body of work icon Sean Phillips to you, this results-driven 21-minute program for 21 days gives you foolproof success, and it's free. Go to 21dayfit.com and start today, and your abs are on the way. That's the number 21dayfit.com, and download the Summer Supercharger immediately. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechanogrowth Factor, or PT141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies.
Want hardcore legal gear? Check out MrSups.com. MrSups.com carries only the best pro hormones, raw powders, and post-cycle products around. MrSups.com can deliver the goods, and no one beats MrSups.com on hardcore, barely legal pro hormones, because MrSups.com is the source. You get wholesale prices by cutting out the middleman. Don't waste your hard-earned money. Go to MrSups.com today and compare for yourself. You won't be disappointed. MrSups.com. That's MrSups.com. Cutting-edge products at wholesale prices.
Melatonin is the best sleep aid in the world, but it has one flaw, the delivery method. Melatonin tablets are not efficient and can wear off too soon, leaving you wide awake in the middle of the night. Time-release tablets make you feel groggy in the morning. Now there's the Age 4 Sustained Delivery Melatonin Patch. This transdermal patch delivers a precise amount of melatonin from the moment you apply it and continues to do so for an entire 6 hours. This ensures a full night's sleep while waking refreshed and ready to go. Visit ageforce.com and use the coupon code SHRMEL and save 50% off your first order. Go to ageforce.com and use SHRMEL today and sleep better tomorrow.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to the Supversity Science Roundup with Adele Moussa, where we apply the sniff test to emerging science. Okay, so we're talking about Brazil nuts, which, by the way, I love Brazil nuts, and I've really, it's amazing. When I was a child, I hated them. My father used to eat them all the time. And after years of eating them, I look for them. I love the flavor of them. They're great. With that being said,
it's funny because I had to get used to it at first as well. They taste like sort of bitter at first.
Yes.
At least was my my impression. And you always have to be cautious about those because they go rancid very fast.
Yes, yes. And that's a really critical thing. If you open up your Brazil nuts and they smell like latex paint, throw them away. And I'll tell you something else, just as an aside. We always had Brazil nuts in our house. I'll never forget this. They have a banana-shaped, very, very hard, brown, triangular shell. They are brutal to break open. My father used to put like three or four of them in his hand and squeeze, and then two of them would shatter, and he would pick the nut meat out of those. And I could vividly see him. We always had Brazil nuts in the house. It's funny. He loved them. I hated them as a kid, but I got to tell you, you do acquire a taste for them, and you look forward to them. But now, Brazil nuts also have complete forms of vitamin E in them, Adele?
They do, but they are not the particularly best source of tocotrienols, no. I guess they will have trace amounts of tocotrienols, and that is actually precisely on topic, because the study we are addressing next is actually a study investigating the safety of tocotrienols. Because you usually assume that whenever we found something that has, for example, anti-cancer effects, and tocotrienols, especially the gamma tocotrienol variety, has been shown to have relatively potent anti-cancerous effects, then we usually assume the more the better. And especially when it comes to those nutrients where you where the name already implies that things are not as simple as it seems, because when you are talking about vitamin E these days, you're talking about at least six compounds, six different tocopherols and tocotrienols. It's not only about having all of them in your diet, or nonetheless of having just one of them, but it's rather about having the correct ratios of them in your diet, right, and in your tissue. And therefore, the study that has just been conducted is actually pretty important, and at least to my knowledge, it's one of the first that really investigated whether, A, it's safe to ingest copious amounts of tocotrienols, and what actually happens to those, in this case, of course, in a rodent study, and where they would accumulate and which effects that would happen, that would have. And in this case, we are seeing that up to a level of 0.2% of the total dietary intake, that is, for those rodents, these were about, 50 milligrams of tocotrienols, which is pretty much for a little rodent. Mm-hmm. This was perfectly safe, at least within the study period. And the reason I emphasize this so much, and don't talk about another study that has been published only 2 days ago, which again found how effectively gamma tocotrienol is in preventing cancer, especially when it's combined with sesame. And guess what? Sesame seeds are rich in tocotrienols. And the reason I mention it in isolation is because, as we've been talking about before, usually you get one compound, not in isolation when you consume it with your food, but with other compounds together. And it's no coincidence that this particular study I just mentioned, which has been published on September 17th, showed that the addition of sesame to the gamma tocotrienols really improved the anti-cancer effect. And in the same way, it is likely that the other forms of vitamin E, which are also contained in sesame, may also contribute and even exponentiate the effect. And what we have seen in the past for the alpha tocopherols, the regular vitamin E, and especially the ones you will find in most cheap supplements, which is solely alpha tocopherol and not the other tocopherols, is that although this is the strongest antioxidant in those in vitro assays, you often end up having problems when you over-ingest the alpha variety and don't get enough of the others, for example, the gamma variety. And sometimes, or some scientists at least, argue that one of the problems we have is actually brought about by the overabundance of alpha tocopherol, compared to gamma tocopherol, and of course compared to the tocotrienols you would get if you just had the vitamin E that is naturally present in food.
Right.
Because these days, almost every a huge amount of foods or foodstuff is actually enriched in vitamin E, not just to put the label vitamin enriched on it, but also because it's a preservant. If, for example, your fish oil would not have added vitamin E in it, it would go rancid within a day or so. And this is just an example of a supplement, but you have also normal foods which are enriched in vitamin E, and in order to prevent them from going rancid, because other than vitamin C, which is water soluble, vitamin E is fat soluble and thus is able to prevent fats or lipids from being oxidized when they are stored for longer periods.
So this monotherapy, basically, because of we just get either one or the other of the tocopherols in our diet in abundance, and not getting the other seven, because there's eight altogether, right? Eight variants of vitamin E. This is where the issue occurs, because vitamin E has been demonized over the years from time to time. There was a study that came out like 6 or 7 years ago that tried to suppose that 400 IUs of vitamin E a day led to a higher risk of a heart attack, because vitamin E somehow has a role in coenzyme Q10 production in myocytes.
Funnily, what protects against this bad this effect on cardiovascular disease is gamma tocopherol.
Okay. So really, the tocotrienols that were in this research, were they found concentrated in specific tissues?
They were relatively evenly distributed, and that's also a good sign, because usually if they accumulate in a certain tissue, you will see an overload.
Right.
Nevertheless, I don't think that it's really necessary to suddenly start oversupplementation with gamma tocopherols. Instead of that, you could rather try to get away from those isolated supplements, and also from products and from dietary supplements. Especially the people who are training for bodybuilding purposes are often ingesting copious amounts of different nutrients in all sorts of products they are not even aware of.
Right.
I did once follow up on the amount of B vitamins I was getting only from a pre-workout product and a BCAA product I was taking, and I was shocked because this was more than 5,000% of many of them, of the RDA. This does not necessarily mean that this is a bad thing, but it's not necessary, and B, there are also certain interactions among the B vitamins that can give you that can really provide problems in the longer term. But it's always it's more critical in terms of the storable or fat storable, or fat soluble and therefore storable vitamins like vitamin E. And the other fat-soluble vitamins, which can really accumulate in tissues and are not that easy to get rid of. And they also influence the metabolism of each other. And we really don't know very much about the tocopherols up now. But we know, for example, that when you ingest copious amounts of alpha-tocopherol, the liver will start cleaning up what the liver believes is too much vitamin E, and mm-hmm. will also start cleaning up the tocopherols, tocotrienols, the little tocotrienols you do even get in your regular diet.
Wow, so that actually could actually cause a further deficit in tocotrienol concentration and a further imbalance of ratios.
Yes, it could, yeah. And it's the same is true for the gamma tocopherols. That is, what you mentioned before, the bad side effects on the heart, they are not just related to having too much vitamin E in the form of alpha tocopherol in your diet, but also they are also a result of the way your body gets rid of the alpha tocopherol it does not need, and side effect, or maybe you could say as a collateral damage, it also gets rid of the other forms of vitamin E, or at least of parts of the other forms of vitamin E, and you can eventually end up being deficient in the other forms, although if you hadn't supplemented, you would have had enough of all of them.
Interesting. We have to take a commercial break. Do you want to summarize anything on the tocotrienol study before we move forward? Because when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about a blog post of yours at subversity.com about caffeine yesterday. Whenever you blog about caffeine and coffee, it always gets a lot of attention. Anything you want to summarize about this? You want to summarize anything about the takeaway on the vitamin E study?
The takeaway is that you need to look into the complexities of complex nutrient compositions in your diet and try to, first of all, make sure you do your best to get your nutrients, your vitamins, your minerals from your diet. And then look what's missing here and why is it missing? Can I compensate via dietary means or do I need a supplement?
Yeah, that's really good advice, something that most people won't bother doing because it takes a little attention for a week or so of watching what you eat and then going to a website like the one produced by the USDA where you can look up the micronutrient ratios of different foods. And looking at your diet, honestly, it takes time. But I can tell you, everybody needs to do it. I did it years ago, and you have to do it once in a while. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about coffee. Adele has posted a blog post at subversity.com that really got the internet spinning yesterday about the potential effects on insulin sensitivity and resistance. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup on Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
No two amino acids have been studied more than creatine and beta-alanine, and no two amino acids have been shown to independently improve athletic performance better than creatine and beta-alanine. When you join these two ergogenic powerhouses together, you get unparalleled results. And when you bypass the stomach and deliver them right to the bloodstream, you get the best single legal performance-enhancing product bar none. Save 50% off your initial order by using the coupon code CB50. That's CB50. Go to ageforce.com today.
You already know how great the Testo 100 Transdermal Testosterone Boosting Patch is. Well, now it's even better. The new and improved Testo 100 patch now contains diaspartic acid, stinging nettle root, and androstenotrione to increase free testosterone while reducing sex hormone binding globulin and aromatase enzyme. It's still made in FDA certified labs and contains all the great ingredients that made it work originally. But now it's even better. Bypassing the stomach to deliver its ingredients throughout the day for greater increases in energy, libido, and muscle building fat-burning effects. Get 50% off when you use the coupon code SHR4. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use the coupon code SHR4 and get your new Testo 100 patch today.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of.
buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back.
I only smoke weed when I need to.
He only smokes weed when he needs to. As opposed to those of you who smoke it all the time. That's Snoop Dogg. Okay, back to the Subversity Science Roundup. Okay, so yesterday you posted a blog post. Got a lot of attention. I guess there is some purported benefits from caffeine. Is it only in the form of coffee, Adele, or was this strictly looking at caffeine as the active ingredient?
Well, interestingly, if we look at the epidemiological data from human studies, we usually see coffee intake.
Okay.
And this particular study I posted or I blogged about yesterday was unfortunately, of course, a rodent study, but it got closer to the actual underlying mechanism because they really could follow up what the rodents ate and could exclude other factors, and they just used plain caffeine. So it doesn't. There are certainly additional benefits from the other ingredients in coffee. For example, coffee contains certain
polyphenols and stuff, right?
Polyphenols and other bitter compounds, which are known to counteract in a way the high blood pressure effect. That is still one of the only real concerns about high caffeine consumption in some individuals. There are people who are more susceptible to this, and some people who are not even bothered by caffeine or coffee consumption.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how does caffeine affect insulin sensitivity? Keep in mind that probably 4 or 5 years ago, I had somebody from Rutgers University. They had done two studies on diabetic individuals and showed that caffeine elicits a release from the liver of glycogen into glucose and maintains that elevated glucose production in the absence of caloric intake or postprandial effects of a meal for up to 12 hours. And their assumption was that caffeine and coffee specifically were bad for you if you were looking to have stable and or low blood sugar levels, which would then result in higher insulin sensitivity. This kind of is exactly the opposite, is it not? Isn't this saying that coffee slash caffeine can actually impart insulin sensitivity?
Well, if you take somebody who doesn't have any insulin sensitivity, you can't expect beneficial results, can you?
No.
I think there's a general flaw in much of the research that's out there, that we are way too often looking at sick people and trying to extrapolate what works for sick people on what must work for healthy people.
Right.
And if you look at the accumulating data of the last 10 years or so, then the vast majority of human data that is obviously mostly of epidemiological nature, and it actually must be because we must look at a daily caffeine consumption. It doesn't really hurt you if you are insulin resistant for 12 hours. That won't end your life. But if you're doing it daily or on a daily basis, and that would happen every day, of course it would be bad for you. But the study after study is actually showing that a moderate caffeine consumption in terms of 3 to maximally 5 cups of coffee a day is nothing but beneficial, and especially in terms of avoiding becoming diabetic and all sorts of other diseases which are slowly being connected to diabetes or insulin resistance, for example, like Parkinson's or several forms of heart disease and pancreatic cancer, of course, and other terms of cancer, dementia and Alzheimer's. They all tie in at the same metabolic end. And actually what the researchers in the particular study that has been published a few days ago found was that the chronic administration, and in this case we are not just talking about chronic like 2 weeks, but lifelong administration to those rodents, was particularly beneficial in the older age. That is, it did not really change much when they were younger, other than it prevented the accumulation of the visceral fat in the midlife of the rodents. That is, if you are now 50, say, a healthy man or a woman in her 50s, and you have been drinking your whole life or have been a habitual coffee consumer for your whole life, the rodent study at hand would suggest that you're, on average, your visceral fat, the amount of visceral fat you're carrying around would be roughly 40% lower than somebody who did not consume.
Okay, so the effects are mitigated if you start to drink coffee midlife, for instance?
No.
Do we even know that?
No. In this rodents, the effects started to really show when they were in their midlife. So this is the real difference here. When we are looking at the acute effects or even at the effects of 2 weeks of caffeine consumption, those may be extra, totally juxtaposed to what will happen a few years later. And what they really saw in this study is that in midlife, the visceral obesity was lower in those rodents. And when they got really old, that is, when humans usually get all those nasty things I've been talking about before, and especially dementia and Alzheimer, of which you have been saying over years that it's diabetes type 3, and
right.
It actually is in a way, that those can, in those years, they have almost the same, or they actually have the absolute identical insulin resistance, insulin sensitivity, or the identical ability to clear glucose from their bloodstream as they had as younger animals. While the other rodents, which were not habitually caffeine consumers, which did not receive every day a little amount of caffeine that was equivalent to three or four cups of coffee in their drinking water, those rodents had really compromised ability to clear those glucose. It was roughly 30% of the original insulin sensitivity.
Now, just to size this up for the listeners, when we talk about a cup of coffee, we talk about 4 ounces of coffee. This was traditionally the standard size of a cup of coffee. Today's cups of coffee range anywhere from 12 to 20 ounces. So I would say that if you were having one 16-ounce cup of boutique coffee, which is probably costing you $5 a day, by the way, you can make it at home, but that's probably adequate in order to see the benefits of coffee. Am I off base on that, Adele?
The dose is usually, at least some of the major brands, meanwhile, give you the exact amount of caffeine in their coffees. For example, Starbucks, I think, lists it. You could compare that, and the dosage is approximately in between 300 and 500 milligrams per day. And what's maybe also important is that there is a fundamental difference whether you ingest all this caffeine once or whether you spread it across the day. And
really?
This is something you always have to keep in mind when you're seeing those rodent studies, because usually when you the rodents didn't drink just once a day, so they didn't get all their caffeine at once. And we know, for example, from a whole different context, which is one of my favorite studies done on human beings and caffeine administration, where they really measured the acute effects of on what we've talked about before, that is the hormonal response to exercise with and without caffeine administration. It turns out that in those studies at roughly 400 milligrams in one serving, there was a turning point where all of a sudden the beneficial effects And in this case, this were increases in testosterone levels and decreases in cortisol and performance increments. They turned to the opposite side, and unfortunately, the next dosage was already 600 milligrams and 800 milligrams, and on the 800 milligrams dosage taken at once, the negative side effects really started to show. And this would actually be a situation in which I would suspect that when you are drinking large boluses of coffee all at once, you could actually see those negative side effects you've started pointing out at the beginning. Because these are the situations where you really get stressed and you get the increased release of stress hormones, which is actually responsible for the increase in glucose in your bloodstream, and at the same time an increase in non-esterified fatty acids, and this blunts the effectivity of insulin to trigger the expression of those glucose transporters, which have been found to be consistently upregulated in the study I have blocked about a day ago,
right,
in the chronic consumption study. So, in other words, chronic consumption means, A, over a long time, but it also means in reasonable amounts spread across the day, and not five of those big Starbucks pots at once.
Yeah, so that and you know what, and it makes perfect sense that spreading it out across the day, but not too late into the evening, would mitigate a lot of the potential side effects, the overstimulatory effects of caffeine. That really does make perfect sense. Let's before we take a break, I want to go into another story. But do you want to summarize the takeaway that you want people to appreciate from the caffeine study?
Well, the most important takeaway in terms of caffeine is that if you like to drink your coffee, keep doing it. Keep an eye on the absolute amount. Try to stick to maybe four, maximally five cups of coffee, and I'm talking about the smaller cups of coffee, that is maximally 500 milligrams of caffeine, or maybe for the bigger guys out there, 600 milligrams of caffeine per day, and don't ingest them all before your workout, because this is a stressing factor that is not good for you, but spread it evenly, and most likely the effects will only be positive, and they will be especially positive in terms of what has long been touted as a negative side effect, that is your insulin sensitivity. They won't make you lose body fat in large amounts, but they will set the scene for keeping you able to do that, for example, as well.
Okay. I want to change the subject a little bit. Parents out there, you've got your kids going back to school. Your kids are being asked to choose a sport to play. Interesting research that Adele has here about the indoor athletes, especially elite athletes, and vitamin D levels. Can we talk about that a little bit, Adele?
Of course you can, yeah.
Okay.
Vitamin D is one of my favorite topics, and I'm...
I got to say something about this. For a long time, we focused on vitamin D3. I focused on vitamin D3. But because of Adele's reporting that actually the active form of D, which is calcitriol, correct? Okay, that this plays a more important role in the translation and transference of the important things that vitamin D does. Dehydroxy, which is tested for, is not necessarily a good benchmark for how your body is doing as it relates to vitamin D. It's actually calcitriol, correct?
Well, it's a good benchmark for how much reserves you have, but it doesn't really tell you what it does with those reserves.
Right, I just want to make sure people understand something. Nobody was talking about calcitriol until Adele started talking about it. And now, for instance, I've got blood work to do this week. I called Dr. Matt Andrea and said I wanted to add calcitriol levels to this and explained why. And he says, this sounds great. So it's not enough just to get the 25-hydroxy. If you want to see the real effects and benefits of D, you have to look for its conversion ratio over to the true active form of biological vitamin D. And that came from Adele Moussa. Nobody else was talking about it. So there you go. I'm sorry.
Well, maybe I can go back a little and talk about the calcitriol issue and how I spotted that, because I tried to find out why is it that we are deficient in D at first. And it's really difficult to elucidate that. But when I did the research on that, I found that much of it is related to defects in conversion. And there is a conversion cycle at the end of which the active form of vitamin D stands, that is calcitriol. And on that note, I usually see only studies done in terms of bone health, because this is calcitriol is known as the form of vitamin D, which will either leach the calcium from the bones if your calcium levels are low, or it will deposit high calcium levels in your serum, in your bones, but unfortunately also in other tissues. And this is why I really want to emphasize this. This is one of those hormones you really don't want more than you just need. So it's not the more the better, and that's guaranteed in this case, because otherwise we will get a heart attack because it's calcified. So just to make that clear, it's not the more active vitamin D you have, the better it is. What we do, however, know is that this active form of vitamin D is also the form of vitamin D which has been shown in experimental trials, mostly done in rodents because it's dangerous, to do all that we have been expecting from vitamin D3 supplementation. That is, it does actually activate the vitamin D receptor and induce the respective metabolic downstream effects. For example, like improve glucose tolerance, and also, this was a study I sent you a couple of days ago, it also figures in building skeletal muscle and keeping skeletal muscle intact. So this is important to understand that on the one hand, it's good to have normal levels, and it appears as if somewhere in the line there is an enzyme missing, or at least our bodies, for whatever reason, don't want to have more of the calcitriol. And I've posted about 2 months ago a really old study that investigated the effect of phosphorus intake on those levels of calcitriol. And what they showed quite conclusively is that an abundance of phosphor in your diet will immediately downregulate the conversion of vitamin D3 to the active form calcitriol, because this is also the form that will regulate both calcium and phosphorus uptake from the intestines. And in order to protect itself from the phosphor onslaught, your body cannot produce more calcitriol if it does not want all the phosphor to overload your serum levels. And this is actually something I would like to see more research in, because we all know that we are getting too much phosphorus in our diets.
Really?
And especially compared to calcium. It's some scientists suggest that our problem, which is currently often ascribed to getting too little calcium, is not so much about getting too little calcium, because many of us do actually get the RDA, but about getting way too much phosphor in comparison to the amount of calcium we are getting. And it is at least the thing I would like to see research in the future. And another thing is, and this goes back to having your children pick the right sport, and
right,
maybe also you as an athlete try to consider doing different stuff from time to time, which is related to two studies actually, which have been published very recently, which found that doing outdoor activities, especially sportive activities, has a close correlation with vitamin D levels, irrespective of the dietary intake of vitamin D. And this goes back to what we said before about nature and whole foods. The way our body is supposed to get its vitamin D is at least in the major part, not from our diets, and at least certainly not from from supplements, but produced from cholesterol in our skin. And this production cascade starts with exposure to the sun. And if you know how complex the human body is, you will also know that all those enzymatic cascades are closely or in some way or another interwoven. And if you just throw vitamin D, which is the raw material, at you, but don't start the process from the beginning, which would start actually with sun exposure, this could be another problem why the cascade is broken in the end, because it does not start off with what it should start off, and this is sun exposure. And even in elite athletes, they have been the researchers that conducted this recently published study have found that those elite athletes who perform in indoor sports had on average 23% lower D3 levels than those who were actively either constantly outside or at least in intervals. That means you do not even have to be working out every day outside. But, for example, if you compete in a sport where in the winter season you cannot go outside because the weather conditions are not right, you can still get enough sun exposure to have higher vitamin D levels by being outdoor and performing physical activities outdoors. Now, all that does not really sound that sexy, and therefore I think it's maybe another study brings this aspect more to the forefront,
right.
Which investigated, it was actually a real tightly controlled study involving 26 older women who were randomly divided into two groups. One performed their exercises, the exact same exercises outside, and the other performed the exercises inside. And while both saw small increments in terms of exercise capacity, only the women who performed their activities outside had a significant decrease in body weight, or in this case, body mass index. Unfortunately, they didn't measure the body fat levels in the study, but I bet that those were the major improvements, that is, that those women really lost body fat compared to just weight. Because A, they were exercising, and B, they got outside and worked out outside. And just anecdotally, I've always felt that in the summertime, where, of course, I'm also more active, but in a way, I'm not really working out more, but I'm just doing all my cardio activities outside. Usually, I'm even cutting back on the overall amount of time I spend on doing cardio on purpose, I would say. This always really helps me lean out to do my cardio work outside, and also makes you just feel great.
Well, you know what? When I lived in Phoenix and I had lost my car, for those of you who've listened to Off Topic know about that story, I had to walk to and from the gym every day in the hottest days of the summer. I mean, for months on end, I was walking to and from the gym every morning, half hour each way in the blazing sun. Regularly took my shirt off because I wanted to get a nice tan at the same time. I figured, you know, might as well multitask here. I was leaner back then than I am today, especially in my face, which I have to believe that the exposure to the sun had something to do with. So in summary, if you want higher levels of calcitriol, supplementing may not be the way to go. You should be out in the sun more often. Is that a fair estimation, or is that reckless of me to say?
It's a fair estimation, it's a good hypothesis, but the actual studies here were reliant on the quote-unquote standard marker, that is 25-OHD. They measured the reserves.
Okay.
But the downstream effects, you see, confirm that this time the vitamin D did its job, and not like in many of the supplementation trials, where the vitamin D levels go up, but we don't see any of the downstream effects we would expect.
Yeah, and then don't forget the woman who speaks on behalf of the cosmetic industry, and what do they call them, the doctors, the skin doctors, dermatology. There was a woman who said that no amount of sun is safe for humans. Could you imagine what stupidity comes out of the mouths of people with accreditations and call themselves doctors? No amount of sun is safe for humans? They just want people to be sicker and sicker, that's all. Okay, stay tuned. When we come back, we've got more Subversity, new science in the roundup. You're listening to SuperHumanRadio.com. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See eye drops. I've been using Can-See for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find Can-See eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. Can-See eye drops. The name says it all.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of.
buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein and the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Mass Pro Synthogen is unlike any supplement to come before it, both in form and function. Synthogen is the world's first messenger RNA translation accelerator. Messenger RNA is the rate-limiting step in growing new muscle. Synthogen rapidly stimulates protein synthesis on demand, day or night. Synthogen allows you to train harder, longer, stronger, and more frequently than your competition. Synthogen is the absolute fastest drug-free recovery agent available. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Synthogen banner ad to learn more. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
The cornerstone of longevity medicine is preserving or improving telomere length by increasing telomerase. Telomeres are the repair kit for your DNA. Maintaining DNA integrity is an important factor in staying young and disease-free. If you're like me, a telomerase activator isn't optional, it's a necessity. The only clinically proven telomerase activator in the world is TA65. That's why I take TA65 every day, and you should too. You can learn more about TA65 by visiting TASciences.com. That's TASciences.com.
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
DJ Yoda.
Yoda.
Here we go.
Slow mo.
DJ Yoda.
Well, welcome back to Subversity Science Roundup on Superhuman Radio. Okay, we're going to go back to an older subject for a moment. Many out there laughed at those of us who strive to eat organic whenever possible, making fun of us and saying, oh, organic is no healthier to eat. It doesn't have any greater degree of nutrients than conventionally grown. And that's because they tried to change the argument to put a smokescreen out there for people who go, yeah, why am I eating organic? The reason we eat organic is because we want to endeavor fewer and fewer toxins going down our throat into our bodies. That's why we eat organic. Roundup, which is a herbicide produced by Monsanto, which is at the root of the genetically modified foods produced today in this country, was designed so that it would be a very powerful herbicide, and Roundup Ready Corn was genetically modified so that Roundup could not kill it. It would kill everything else, but not the corn. So the farmers could be indiscriminate and spray copious amounts of Roundup all over their field. Thus, those who eat Roundup Ready Corn, the exact opposite of what Monsanto promised happens. You encounter more pesticides and herbicides because they can be indiscriminate and just spray it on everything. And subsequently, there's been a lot of concern about the overconsumption of this very, very powerful, unknown, what it can do to you herbicide. So there's been something in the news abroad that has not really been as loud here in the United States. Adele, talk about this study, please.
Well, I was quite surprised when I just mentioned that to you, because I thought you would start out with that, because it's all over the media in the U.S. as it is here in Europe. It's number four on the major news channels, I should say. When you search on this television, it's the fourth or fifth topic you will see is the new study on GMO mice, or GMO corn, as it's called in the U.S., and how it's giving rats cancer, and how dangerous it could be.
And let's be very clear about something. This study was performed outside of the far-reaching financial effects of Monsanto. This study was produced in France with cooperation with a university in Italy.
GMO corn is prohibited in Germany, in France, and in Italy. It's not allowed to produce it here. It is allowed to import it into the European Union for obvious reasons, because if we wouldn't allow the GMO corn to be imported, you wouldn't allow our cars to be exported to the U.S. or imported to the U.S., I should say.
Right.
But it's not allowed to produce GMO corn here. And actually, you won't find it at any supermarket store, because it would have to be labeled and people wouldn't buy it. So
yes, and you know what they do with GMO corn in Europe, folks? They buy it and they throw it away just to keep us Americans happy. So they go, we're not going to eat this stuff. We'll buy it and let those stupid Americans think that we're using it. And they use it for other things. They use it to weight down buckets and stuff like that. Nobody's eating it over there. And here's why. Okay? So Roundup is sprayed on everything here in the United States. So much so that it's spawning super weeds that Roundup doesn't even work against. And soon we're going to be looking at Agent Orange as a viable solution for Monsanto's woes. This is a story that is all over the news abroad, but it's only spoken about in very select groups here in the United States. And even then, it's not positioned as what it really is, that Roundup is linked to tumor production. Is that not right?
Yeah, it was. And this is actually this is not the first study those French scientists did. I think the first one was published about 4 years ago already. And it got a lot of criticism, of course, from the GMO companies. And this first study basically investigated the relatively short-term effects of ingestion of this special variety of GMO corn. And they already found that the relatively short exposure to the corn induced profound changes in the kidney and liver morphology. And this is characteristic of any pesticide ingestion. This is actually what we've been talking about the past two shows already, that the toxins are accumulating over time. The first organs, which are hit by the onslaught of pesticides, are, of course, your detoxification organs, which are your kidneys and your liver. And I don't really know what happened in the meantime. I know that the scientists from this group specifically from France got quite a rough beating for going out against the GMO corn in the past already. And I suppose that is also why it took some time, and they really wanted to make sure to have some reliable data to come out with, although there are some minor issues which have already, of course, been brought forward against the study at hand, why it would not be representative, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not so familiar with all the research, all the previous research in this area to comment on that. But in general, there is a very intriguing information about the actual safety data study that has been conducted by the producers. And this study already went far beyond what the regulatory tests would have required. And still, the duration of treatment was only 13 weeks. So they gave...
Very, very short period of time. There's a very short period of time to see these kind of changes occur.
And what the French scientists now did was the quasi-equivalent to the caffeine study we've been talking just about before. They administered this corn and a what they call the closest isogenic maize. that is a type of maize which would be quasi-identical to the Ready Roundup corn, but is just lacking this specific gene. This was the one they fed the rodents as a control, and this is already one of the points that is criticized, because the original study by the producer, they used a maize line that is not substantially equivalent, and they say this would be what you would usually consume. But no matter what, the most important information is the duration of the study was 24 months, and this is basically when the rodents start dying from being old, from just being old. And unfortunately for those little creatures, those who had been assigned to the Ready Roundup groups, most of them did not really make it to the old age, because they died before, and most died of cancer. And 50% of the males and 70% of the females died in some groups on diets containing GM mice, while only 20 or respectively 30% died in the control group. That is, especially in the females, it's an increase of 50%. And if you look at the actual data the scientists, the hormonal data the scientists measured, for example, you see pretty significant effects on testosterone levels in the rodents.
Right.
So significant, in fact, that to the same extent as the estradiol levels dropped in the later life, the testosterone levels literally exploded. And this is particularly dangerous for female mammals, as their balance is obviously a different one between estradiol and testosterone. And whenever this balance is off, the risk of cancer rises. And this is probably the underlying reason why the mammary glands were also the major organs that were befallen in those animals. And at first, when I saw, the first time I saw the study was yesterday, when someone posted a link on Facebook, and I saw the ugly pictures of those rodents with tumors that were about one-third of their body size.
Wow.
And I thought, no, this must be a fake, because this is usually not what you see in a scientifically published paper. And it was relatively difficult to find the actual study, because the first link I got was one of those standard panic blogs where you people are trying to scare people and don't even give appropriate references.
Right, right.
So it took me some time to actually find the magazine title where the study was published and to download the actual paper. And this figure, which features three images of really nasty rodents, I think you know which picture I'm talking about.
Yeah.
This had been shown on television here in Germany in every major news reel, and people really freaked out. For example, they obviously I saw a report earlier today where they had a notebook and went into a city, I think it was Mainz in Germany, and asked people on the streets what they would think about this product that gave rodents these deformities. And of course, this is in a way, this is again fear-mongerism. But this tells you something about also the intentions of the researchers, because their intent is, first of all, of course, they are trying to get to the bottom of what does GMO really do to us. And of course, not what does GMO do to us, but what does happen if we artificially introduce a pesticide into a product we are then going to eat. And as it turned out, at least in this study, this pesticide causes basically the same effects as it would have if you ingested corn that has been sprayed all over with a chemical pesticide that would not have been in it before. And another facet of this is obviously a political one, because there is a really huge pressure, especially from the U.S., on the European government to apply similarly loose regulations on general modifications here in Europe as they are currently in effect in the U.S. And hitherto, at least in terms of producing genetically modified crop here in Europe, the European Union has not given in to those demands. And there has been a debate about even banning those products which have been hitherto allowed. That would, of course, also be the case for these GMO corns. And therefore, the intention, I believe, that one of the reasons the researchers actually included three of those really ugly pictures you usually don't see in scientific publications. You see the livers and the kidneys in this image as well. And this is what you usually have in the papers, and maybe one picture of a mouse or a rat or a rodent or whatever they use. And I think they have planned this quite carefully, exactly how the study should look like, which pictures should be in there, so that the media will cover it and people will say, no, I don't want this. And in the end, if you have enough people who really speak out against it, it is pretty hard to make politics against them.
Yeah, but that's not happening here in the United States, because people are speaking out against GMO all the time. And
I think that, I can't tell exactly how it is in the U.S., but I think maybe it is still not that the real majority is so concerned about it that it would be a topic. For example, Obama would make a central piece of his current campaign.
Oh, he did. He did already. Back when he was running the first time, he said that he would absolutely force the hand of labeling GMO, because his exact words were, people deserve to know what they're eating. And then under his administration, there's been more GMO crops approved than the previous 21 years. So, you know what? We don't want GMO. It's not a partisan issue. It's a health issue. Regardless of who's in office, we don't want GMO here in the United States. Why do the organizations that provide oversight allow the poisoning of American people is really the question that you should be asking. I don't care who you're voting for, folks. I'm not saying this is a Republican or Democrat thing. This is a government thing. Why is it that our lives are somehow worth less than the European lives? I mean, think about that. They're getting ready to ban even the importation of GMO. Rats are developing tumors the size of littermates on their bodies because of the exposure to Roundup, and they're spraying Roundup on everything now. Everything is getting Roundup. I mean, they even sell it in the hardware stores. You can use it on your lawn. I mean, this is disgusting. Glyphosate, I think it is, or something like that. But anyway, we have to take a commercial break. Adele, what is the summary that you want to point out here in this? Can you point to more importance for organic foods and non-genetically modified foods from this study? Do you feel confident with that?
I think, especially in the case of genetically modified, not in terms of health benefits, but just in terms of increasing revenue, because this is the only reason this genetic modification has taken place. It was not about, for example, increasing the omega-3 content or what we just talked about, decreasing the phosphor content or something like that. It was just about producing more corn cheaper.
Right. And keep in mind that Bill Gates is telling people that we need GMO to feed the world. Yeah, feed the world poison. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll pick it up. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup with Adele Moussa. Visit Subversity, S-U-P-P. VERSITY.com. We'll be right back. Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products
you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
The cornerstone of longevity medicine is preserving or improving telomere length by increasing telomerase. Telomeres are the repair kit for your DNA. Maintaining DNA integrity is an important factor in staying young and disease-free. If you're like me, a telomerase activator isn't optional, it's a necessity. The only clinically proven telomerase activator in the world is TA65. That's why I take TA65 every day, and you should too. You can learn more about TA65 by visiting TASciences.com. That's TASciences.com.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan-2, Mechano Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
You may not recognize Muscle Gauge Nutrition, but that's because they've been in the background as a private label manufacturer for some of your favorite brands. Now get ready to hear their name a lot as an introductory offer. Get 5 pounds of pure whey protein isolate for as little as $11 a pound and get free shipping too. Each 30-gram scoop contains the requisite amount of leucine to stimulate the anabolic response. Check out these flavors. Cake batter, chocolate, cinnamon bun, ice cream sandwich, rocky road, strawberry, vanilla, and unflavored. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad and use the coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back. You know, the responsibility of a parent starts the minute that the baby pops out and your decision to choose breastfeeding.
To be caffeinated, by the way.
What's that?
It doesn't have to be caffeinated, by
yeah,
the way.
There you go. It doesn't have to be caffeinated. Breast milk has been shown in a recent study in University of California, I believe San Diego, to protect babies against contracting HIV even when the mother is HIV infected. Think about the magic of nature. You can't get this from any pharmaceutical company. Breast milk knows to protect the baby from the virus. It sequesters the virus. Okay? What else is in the news about breast milk right now, Adele?
Well, actually, breast milk is in the news constantly, you could say. But the latest news is that breastfeeding is best even if the mother is exposed to toxic heavy metals, and in this case, to arsenic in particular. Because this is a study that has been done by the WHO, the World Health Organization, because they are concerned about the increased exposure of mothers-to-be and mothers in not only in the third world, but also in the so-called developed world, and especially in China, who are exposed to toxic metals. And they tried to find out how this would affect the children and whether it would not be better to feed them on regular infant formula. And the consistent results were that even in those zones which are really highly contaminated with arsenic, the concentration of this mineral or of many of those heavy metals in the breast milk is actually so low that the infants are better protected against heavy metal toxicity than if they would consume one of the formulas that are available to the people there. So the recommendation of the World Health Organization is therefore that it is surmised from available data that although the lactating mothers resided in highly arsenic-contaminated zones, the concentration of the toxic metal is low in the breast milk, and breastfeeding infants are protected from the toxic effects of arsenic. Therefore, breastfeeding is still the best way to protect the infants in arsenic-contaminated zones as per the World Health Organization's recommendations. So this is in a way quite similar to what you just mentioned about the HIV virus. That is, the mother is exposed to the virus and still the child does not get infected if it's consuming the breast milk. And in a similar way, the mother is exposed to the toxic arsenic and still does not contaminate or does not pass on the contamination to her child via the breast milk.
Well, and something else, you know, I have to give props to Dr. Oz for one thing, okay? He's really been banging the drum about arsenic poisoning in children. I mean, looking at baby cereals, you know, these rice-based baby cereals. Also, apple juices and juices in general. And he's brought to the forefront the discussion about arsenic. And, you know, of course, the FDA and the companies that they provide oversight are saying that the amounts of arsenic that are in there are, you know, generally safe and these are naturally occurring. It's like, it's all nonsense. You breastfeed your baby, you don't have to worry about this stuff. Okay? If you're breastfeeding your baby and you can breastfeed your baby for up to a year easily, you don't have to worry about rice-based arsenic-containing products or apple juices and so on and so forth. So it's really, you know what? I still don't understand why more women don't breastfeed. There's no reason for it. It's natural. It's what we were designed to do as humans. And the only reason why you stopped breastfeeding was because back in the day, they wanted mothers to get back to work and be more ambulatory and not tied to a child's feeding schedule. And that's why formulas were created. They were not created because there was some sort of deficiency in breast milk that was causing problems for babies. Totally selfish. In my humble opinion, it starts right there. The responsibility as a parent. Don't have a baby if you're not interested in breastfeeding. I'm sorry. That's the way
actually,
it should be.
Because another interesting study on mothers-to-be has shown that when mothers are physically active in the pregnancy, irrespective of their body weight, the children or their offspring will have a higher insulin sensitivity and a greater lean mass, or fat-free lean mass in later life. So it starts way earlier. It starts actually, probably it starts even before you are even conceiving, but it goes on with breastfeeding, of course.
Well, and this study is actually the exact opposite of something else we already know and proves the point of what Adele is saying. We know that obese mothers produce babies in an environment of insulin resistance. Those babies go on to be very big babies, very big children, and they have all the early markers of metabolic disorders in their 12th, 13th, and 14th year. So,
well, that's interesting, because this is what we have hitherto believed, but there's another recent study which showed that when you are shifting your the way you live, within pregnancy, you reduce those risks greatly. So even obese mothers can give birth to healthy children when they are watching their diet and starting to exercise when they are pregnant. But unfortunately, I see more women, at least here in Germany, I don't know if it's in the U.S., it's probably the same, who've been dieting all their life, trying to get lean or to stay lean, and then they are getting pregnant and suddenly are telling themselves, well, now I can afford everything, to eat everything or to eat whatever I want for the time I'm pregnant, because my child needs those vital nutrients. And this is exactly the worst thing you can do, that is to start overeating in pregnancy. You don't have to starve yourself, but you have to really watch and eat healthy while you're pregnant, because this is setting those epigenetic markers we've been talking about before in the context of selenium. And this is setting the markers that will be effective not only in the early age, but even until your children may die prematurely, because they are programmed to develop metabolic disease early in life.
Yes. And you know, something? Doctors are at fault in this area too, because pediatricians and OBGYNs were telling their patients, eat everything, eat whatever you want, don't worry about putting on weight. Baloney. That's exactly the opposite message that they should be promoting. They should be saying to mothers, you should only put on about 25 to 30 pounds maximum during this pregnancy. According to some statistics that we talked about on a previous show where we addressed this whole thing and the importance of exercise during pregnancy with Dr. Cassandra Forsythe Probanek, I mean, we talked about the fact that a healthy pregnancy only needs like 26 pounds of weight gain. And there's women out there that are putting on 50, 60, 70 pounds during pregnancy. They're using their pregnancy as a reason to balloon up. And guess what? Ballooning back down doesn't come easy once you have a baby to take care of. So this is really critical. If you are pregnant, you need to start thinking about exercise now. And if you're a high-risk pregnancy, of course, work with your doctor. But you need to find ways to exercise. You're doing it for the child. If you know what? Most parents won't do anything healthy for themselves, but if it means for their children, they'll do it for their children. Do it for your unborn child. Start exercising now. Adele, before we end the show, there's one other topic that we have to cover, and that was something that you blogged about. Or, you know, you didn't blog about it, but you mentioned it in the primer today on Facebook about androgens, correct?
Correct. In a way, I did blog about it, but not about the most recent finding, which just confirms what I've written about in a series I called Intermittent Thoughts on Building Muscle. And it was only as an aside in this series that I cited an older study which already suggested that androgens have a certain effect on stem cells, which block the development of adipose tissue in a way that they maintain pluripotent stem cells, that is, stem cells which could become, for example, cartilage or adipose tissue or even bone cells, and could also be used to repair muscle tissue. They keep them in a state of being ready to be converted to something useful or quote unquote useful, and not to be converted or to become an adipocyte, that is, a fat cell. And what the recent research that is about to be released in a couple of days, there's just the press release for which hints at the results of the study. It says that there's an intriguing antagonism of the androgen receptor and the corticosteroid, that is the receptor to which cortisol binds on those cells. And again, we are talking about chronic exposure. That means chronically low androgen levels will reduce this effect of on blocking the conversion to adipocytes, while chronically elevated cortisol levels will increase the chances of those stem cells, which are actually meant to be there to replace what is needed at the moment to become adipose cells.
And they can't change back once they make that that conversion, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Once they are have passed a certain point and a point of specialization, they are adipocytes and they can't be converted back, at least not in a normal physiological way.
Hey, Adele, as a side note, I just thought of this. You know what I'd love to do a show on sometime if you feel up to doing the research for this? Does our body have a set number of stem cells, or do we continually create new stem cells in the proper conditions? I have a lot of unanswered questions about stem cells, and I feel that stem cells are very, very important, not from a therapeutic standpoint, but from just the standpoint of having the body be able to repair itself. So it's interesting.
It's quite funny. I've just read a report from a university here in Dortmund, which is now doing, way past the experimental stage. They are actually treating people who are effectively getting blind on one eye due to certain conditions by extracting stem cells which are there in the healthy eye to regenerate the retina, and injecting them in the defect eye. And the guy they interviewed about his about his operation. He was almost blind on one eye and could hardly see, at least he could only see the outlines of people on the right eye. They injected those stem cells and the eye regenerated on its own. And this shows you that you need the right stem cells at the right place and you need the right cofactors around them.
Right.
And in this case, testosterone or androgens, and in the study I've been talking about before, it was not testosterone but DHT, which did this job. This provides the right condition for the stem cell to differentiate into a certain type of cell you want there. And I think this is a really exciting area of research and one we do not really know very much about.
Was there any discussion about retinol or the retin X receptor portion of translation to differentiation?
In this particular study, not, no. It was not mentioned. They just investigated the differential effects of corticosteroids and androgens.
Yeah, this is
but
exciting.
In general, you are right that oftentimes you have vitamin A involved. And interestingly, we are seeing here a co-expression of androgen and a corticosteroid receptor. And in the case of the vitamin A and vitamin D receptor, you see an even closer relationship, which is called a heterodimer.
Right.
And in this case, it's not antagonistic, but it's rather like you had a safe and two people with different keys, and the two guys, you need both guys in place, position their key at the right time in the right place, and turn the key at the right moment. In order to get the job done. And we see this especially in terms of retinoic acid and the vitamin D receptor and retinoic acid and also those PPAR, those peroxisome proliferator
right.
receptors.
You know, in electronics, we call this an AND gate, A-N-D, an AND gate.
Yeah.
So you have two instances that have to occur. And when they both occur at the same time, something else happens. So this is really interesting. Very, very good stuff. We have to plug the blog again. It really is the best blog on the internet. I'm not just saying that. Adele breaks the news on stories that nobody else gets for months. Months later, people are talking about something, and he's like, oh, I wrote about that 3 months ago. If you want the news now, if you want to impress your friends with how smart you are, you need to start reading Supversity, SUPPVERSITY.com to get this stuff straight. And as you can see, Adele does not pander to the high impact, lowest common denominator statements. He breaks everything down, the science down, so that people can understand. And if he says a word that you don't understand, here's an opportunity for you to elevate your vocabulary, your health vocabulary, which we know leads to greater health. How do you like that one? Get yourself a dictionary, look the word up, make yourself smarter, endow yourself with the answers. It all starts at subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. Adele, there were other stories we didn't get to. We'll add these to the mix for next Thursday. How's that sound?
I suppose the mix will be so large already that there will be little place for them, but we'll see.
Okay. All right, well, listen, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do the show today, okay?
It was fun.
Okay.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you. And tomorrow is Friday, which means I will be joined in the studio by the lovely and talented Elisa Profumo to perform Casual Friday. Thank you for listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good. This is the